Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for joining us. And today, we got one of our favorite things to do here. We've got our longtime songer friend, Pedro, with his What Am I Doing Here talk, where he'll tell us the story of what he's doing and why he's here, while we just maybe learn something about those things for ourselves. And this one was long overdue. Pedro's been a part of this place for many years and practicing for a whole lot longer and had a lot of great startup insights on what we're all doing here to share. And I'm really glad we finally get to put it out for you. I hope you enjoy. And a huge shout out and thank you to everyone pitching in, doing what you can to help keep this community funded and thriving for many years to come. If you'd like to join them, you can go over to aczc.org/donate, make a one-time donation, or even better, become a recurring member at whatever level you can afford. We are 100% small donor funded and appreciate and need all the help we can get. But if you cannot afford to donate, please do not. Thank you for helping to keep us going just by joining in and taking part. But if you can't afford to donate, please do, because that's how we can almost sort of kind of afford to keep this free and available for everybody. And okay, enough out of me. Here you go. On with the show. Here's Pedro with a clever game. What am I doing here? And now, the part where brave song members tell us the story of what they're doing and why they're here. Pedro, what are you doing here?
I don't know. So hey guys, my name is Pedro. I've been coming to this sangha since, well, the first time I came in here was probably, I think it was 2017. It was a while ago. I think it was in a different place at the time. But since that first time, I came in once, and then it took me like a couple years until I came back. And really, when I started to come in a lot more often was just before the pandemic started. And then from then on, it was great because the Zoom started and it was easy to like tune in a little bit more. And I love coming back here. And yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is about Zen and about being in this community that makes me keep coming back. But I'm going to explore that a little bit today. And hopefully talking to you all as well can help me figure all that out. So a little bit about how I got into Zen in the first place. So I'm Brazilian originally, born in Brazil. I moved around a lot when I was growing up, was raised Catholic, but I had pretty chill parents when it came to religion. And with Catholicism, there's like a thing called confirmation. A lot of people get forced to do this, but in theory, the idea is, oh, you need to be sure, like you have faith in this whole religion and everything. And when they told me that, I was like, I'm not sure. I don't know what's going on. So my parents were like, okay. And that's when I got to go take a comparative religion class in school. And that was like my first exposure to Buddhism. My first kind of like the idea I had of Buddhism was this guy sat under a tree and like thought about things really hard and got godlike superpowers from it. And I thought that was really cool. And on top of that, there's other people throughout the ages that have attained to that same kind of special position in the world. And I thought that was amazing. That was fascinating. Would love to meet someone that's enlightened and has all these like amazing abilities. And that was it for a while. And when I was a little bit later in my teens, I made a group of friends who were really into like mysticism and magic and all this kind of wooey kind of like, yeah, mystical stuff and just all kinds of different things that I was like learning about and getting my mind blown about. And one of the things that kind of really stuck to me, like when I was like 17 or so, or no, I was 16. I was 16 and I was given a koan. And at that time that I was given a koan, I had like just learned about what meditation is and like I had been trying different types of meditation that were very nothing to do with Zazen. I would lie down and do like some dream work or like visualize things or sit down and like just see where my thoughts went, which I guess is kind of similar to what we do here. And one of the things was I was given this koan and was told, yeah, just kind of like sit down and meditate and think about the koan and see what you come up with. Yeah, so that was almost 20 years ago, and I've never like looked back at what that koan was, but for this, I actually looked up what the koan was. I'm pretty sure it's this one. It's a koan by Master Wu Men Hui Kai, and the book was published as Wu Mengguan, or The Gateless Gate, and it was case 38. And the koan goes, Wuzu Fayan said, it is like a water buffalo that passes through a window. Its heads, horns, and four legs all pass through. Why can't the tail pass through? And so I thought about that one for a while, and eventually, like, yeah, I struggled with it. I came up with some kind of, like, I would say, philosophical answer to it that sounded nice, but didn't make any sense to me. But, like, the person that had shown me the koan was like, yeah, that works, that's good. And I was like, okay, so it's, like, it's just like a riddle where you just have to come up with some clever philosophical thing where you're saying it is one thing, but it's also not at the same time. And I was like, okay, that's the trick. I get it. But I didn't like I didn't get any kind of deep insight about myself or about the world from it. I was just like, okay, that's a clever game. And yeah, so I mean, I kept meditating and trying out all kinds of like breath work and just dabbling with spirituality in all its different traditions. And during that time, I was also, like, I had been moving around a lot. I was born in Brazil, but I had never really lived there. And yeah, I definitely had, like, a very disconnected sense of self in a way. I didn't feel like I had a route to a place. Like, my family's in one place, my friends are in another, I'm living in another place. And during that time, I picked up the book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And while I was reading that book, there's a part where they're talking about the number 42 and how that's the answer to life, the universe, and everything. And for some reason, once I read that, it just like struck me, like not to get too poetic with it, but it was just really like everything changed for me. And I was looking back at like all this stuff that I had learned about Zen and was like, oh, now I get it. And it's hard to explain, but I think it's just idea of no words and no actual answer will ever be satisfying. You're always seeking for something, but that answer, it's just never, it's not the point. If you're just chasing after that answer, you're going to miss out on the entire journey to get to that answer. So yeah, I think that was one way to put it. Honestly, I thought I was like enlightened for a minute there. And of course, yeah, I thought I was, yeah, it was amazing. And any point in time, I'll be able to like meditate and levitate or something. So yeah, I kept doing my like freestyle meditations and then graduated high school, went to college, stopped meditating, just did the usual college thing and was partying a lot and enjoying time with friends and having a good time. But I always had this thing where, so I had a friend who also had like a similar moment where they read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. And he was like, yeah, my life changed and like, I get life now. And for some reason, that annoyed me. I was like, that's not real Zen. I know real Zen. It's like koans and stuff. So once I left college, I was living in an apartment and I really wanted to get into meditation. I knew how helpful it had been for me, like as a teenager when I was moving around and like was trying to like make new friends and make an identity for myself. When I was like graduating college, trying to figure out what direction to take in my life, I was like, maybe I should start meditating again and kind of get some clarity about where I'm at and what I want to do with my life. And I found out there was equal distance for me, Tibetan Buddhist and Zen center. And for some reason, I thought Tibetan Buddhism was really awesome and still do. But yeah, I just can't get into the like guru worship thing. So it didn't last very long with that. But as soon as I went into the Zen center, it felt kind of like home. It felt like going back home or something. So this was in Toronto at the Toronto Zen Center. They have a very formal style to them. Everyone wears robes. Even if you're new, you get a loaner robe. Everything's very formal. Before you even step into the place, you are given instructions on exactly when to bow, where to go, what to do. And so it felt kind of cool. Like you got to like dress up and almost like felt like cosplay in a way. And it was great to like kind of get into that whole world. But it also kind of felt like, oh, am I going back to church now? Is this like really what I want to do? And I felt a little with all the standing and bowing, like, is this really what I want to follow up? I just want to do a little bit of meditation. And the thing that really got me was we did some chanting at the end of that first sit, and I read the Prajnaparamita for the first time, and just the way it talks about emptiness and the way it says, yeah, like the no eyes, no nose, no body, that whole part where you're listing out all the things that it isn't, just really struck with me. And like just this comfort with emptiness and with what it can really mean. It just really, really resonated with me at the time. And so, yeah, it was something that I still look back at that and think like, yeah, the formality of it wasn't what was kept me coming back, but it was that comfort with engaging with emptiness and engaging with like something that I had seen glimpses of and understood to some extent, but then like I'm surrounded by a community of people that are also looking for that or are also interested in exploring that. Yeah, the beauty of emptiness, or I don't know if that's the right word, but anyway, that was what kept me coming back to the Toronto Zen Center. But yeah, the formality of it was a little tricky. When I was there, we learned from Philip, or the main teacher that brought this school was called Philip Kaplow. He wrote a book called The Three Pillars of Zen. So when I was getting into Zen, I bought two books. The first one with Three Pillars of Zen, which is, yeah, very interesting. It is very like turn of the century. And it does have like some very flowery language about what the enlightenment experience is like. And it does very much talk about it as like an experience that someone can attain to. But the other book I got was Hardcore Zen by Brad Warner. And that book was interesting because it also talks about Three Pillars of Zen, and it talks about how much he didn't like that book. I kind of liked it at first because like I was still in that mindset of, oh yeah, I want to sit down and then one day I'll get to this special point in my thinking, in my experience. But looking back, the Hardcore Zen book and the way it talks about just sitting and about trying to be the no nonsense, that's really what brought me to Zen. You're not trying to impress anyone. You're just sitting, you're just being there and you're just being present. And that's all there is to it. And why chase after anything else? There's just this here now, and that's all the magical, supernatural amazingness that you need is this world here now. And that was really starting to resonate with me. Eventually moved out to California to chase after my career goals as working in film production. And of course, when I moved out here, I had heard that Brad was around, so that was living here and had like this small sangha, and I was dying to go check it out. I have to tell a little bit of this story, because the first time I went to ACZC, and coming from this place where like everything was so formal, and it was such a casual environment. And of course, like the teacher just came in, no one's wearing any robes. It was just completely different. And it was just like, oh, these are my people. That's exactly how it felt. And yeah, I remember he talked about being put into something that scans your brain. And he said that he went in for this study to study people that do a lot of meditation and seeing how meditation affects their brain. And he told us that when he was sitting and doing that, there was no difference, that his brain was the same whether he was sitting or whether he was not. And that there's nothing special to Zazen, that it is really just sitting. It's not about doing any special tricks with your brain or doing anything that's going to make you think differently. It is about just sitting and being present. And at the same time, that was the first time I sat Shikantaza as well. So it all really connected with me. And from then on, I obviously, with all these life commitments, I didn't come back as often as I wanted to. It was, yeah, practice has always been something that has come in and out for me. I started meditating 20 years ago, started doing Zen probably 15 years ago, but I've never been consistent with it. And I have to confess that. And also because I hear a lot of people that do really great and are able to sit, but I think it's important to kind of be out there and just say that even though I suck at being consistent in meditation, it's something that brings me so much meaning and clarity in my life, and something I can't see myself ever going back from it now. So that's how my practice has been. It's gone up and down. Want to quickly address last year where I was able to help the Sangha with bottom lining, with essentially coming in and helping to clean and helping to keep the place organized and ring the bells and make sure that we keep going, especially when Dave was away. And that was like another level to my understanding of what it is to be practicing Zazen, in that it's more than just yourself, and it's more than just your community. And even just having a moment where I was sitting here, there was no one on the Zoom, there was no one in the room, but we were scheduled to sit here, and just sitting here with, I mean, of course, there were all the statues and everything, but it was just me and the statues, and it was, I just felt like the whole, it's still like you're part of the Sangha, and you're part of like this whole network. And that was really profound to me, and that's something so important to my practice now and what I'm learning from it. One other thing that just wanted to mention is lately I have been very bad about meditation. I'm not a good Buddhist, but it's obviously work stuff has gotten in the way and I haven't been able to sit as much. But again, I'm so glad I can come back here anytime and still sit down, and no one's going to come up and be like, hey, have you been doing it every day? Are you doing all right? It's just, we just get to sit and we get to share in this amazing experience that is life and that is practicing Zazen. And yeah, it's a privilege to be here. Now, what exactly am I doing here? Still not sure. But one thing that I was thinking about, just to cap this off with to go back to this koan about, it is like a water buffalo that passes through a window, its head, horns, and four legs all pass through. Why can't the tail pass through? I was interested, there was a little comment from Dogen here when he says, when the Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it's already sufficient. When the Dharma does fill your whole body and mind, you know something is missing. And when I read that a few hours ago, it really resonated with where I am right now. I've got a lot going on in my life right now, got a lot of stress, got a lot of things that I'm trying to juggle at the same time, and I've been feeling very overwhelmed about it. And I've been longing for a minute to kind of come out here and sit down and spend some time in community. It's never going to be 100% satisfying, and maybe that's part of the challenge and part of the like the spice of life in a way. The emptiness will always be around there, and that's kind of cool. Yeah, so that's a little bit about my life story. Hopefully it made sense, but that's where I am now. I'm glad and so fortunate to have all these people. This is a big crowd for Monday night, but this is awesome that you guys came here and listened to me rant about how I got here. I don't think about this that often, so thank you for sitting, and now I'm opening it up to anyone that has any questions, wants to learn more about how I got here, or wants to question me about my thoughts on what Zazen practice is about.
I feel like you and I are very similar in the sense of like, we both have a lot of irons in the fire. We're committed to this. We do bottom lining, like we're in here early. We enjoy that. But also the same as you, like I'm not always that consistent. That weighs on me a lot of times. But my question is, do you feel like when you're either in the zone of sitting consistently or out of it, do you notice a difference with how you feel or how you operate or just kind of your function in life?
Yeah, definitely. It's sometimes hard to see it in the moment when I'm sitting every morning, even morning and night, and doing that consistently for weeks. There's still struggles and there's still times where I lose myself or like get lost in stress or make mistakes or forget things. And that's just a part of life. I think there's a little bit more resilience to that. There's a little bit more accepting of my mistakes and moving past that when I'm meditating or when I'm sitting zazen more consistently. But at the same time, I also think there's a lot that in a way doesn't go away. All this time that I've spent sitting, even when I haven't been for a couple weeks, that I'll still look back to those moments and look back to those insights and find comfort in them. But of course, things seem to flow better when I'm sitting more often. And one big thing that I always, actually lately, I haven't quite seen that, but most of the time when I haven't been sitting, I can like look back to the day. And usually it's because like, I'm like, oh yeah, I don't have any time to do it. But if I look back and think about it and like, was like, oh yeah, I was like just pacing around, like stress about something for half an hour, I probably could have sat during that time. So yeah, but at the same time, I always tell myself that. And yeah, in the last like week or so, I took on too much. I was like trying to juggle two jobs at once. And there was just no time it was hard to find time to sleep. So it's tricky, but yeah. But then the other thing I hear about is like, just sleep less and do more zazen. And I don't have an answer for that. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. I'll leave that to the experts.
I'll have to try that. Yeah. I felt like I had a similar life trajectory to you. So yeah, kind of ex-Catholic, meditated as a teenager and arced just in a similar way. Yeah, I'm just curious now, that was you gave us the history and here we are, and I'm just curious if you have a sense of where you are going with your practice now, or you feel the flow going, or even if you have any sense of what you're like, where you're hoping it to go, or
yeah. I try really hard to be like, oh yeah, I'm doing like a goalless practice. I'm just coming here and sitting and this is fine. And this is all I need. But if there is something I want to work towards in terms of my practice, it would mainly be to help keep growing the Sangha and help make it a stronger Sangha and participate in it more. That's really kind of the goal now, more than like a personal, just like I want to have superpowers or something. It's more about this is great and I'd love to help build more of it. Yeah. But I don't do that good of a job. I haven't been coming in. to be fair, it's a goal. It's a goal.
Thank you for your talk, Pedro. It was wonderful. And you're just a joyful presence of the Sangha. So we're happy to have you when you can be here. A lot of the things you said hit home for me as well. And I was just reflecting just before we sat down today on my own sort of zazen experience, because a number of us, myself included, just came off of a little kind of intensive weekend with a lot of zazen. And I had kind of a stressful day today at work. And I sat down and I was like, man, I just did like a million hours of this. Like, I don't want to do it right now. I just want to watch TV right now. But it's like, I feel like inevitably it's like, I don't know, I always feel better. And even if I feel worse, it's like just feeling the worst feels better than just diluting it with shitty reality TV or whatever. So I don't know, I guess it just made me think about, I'm curious what your, I mean, it's obviously there are seasons of life where it's just, you can't fit it all in. And like you said, maybe it's just more zazen and less sleep. For me, I've choose more sleep. But I'm just curious sort of what your calculus is, and maybe you answered this in another question, but sort of what brings you back in or what makes you think maybe it's better to put my time elsewhere?
That is a really good question. And like, I'm not the best person to answer it because I feel like I make the wrong decision often. But I want to say it's like inevitable. Like it's not sitting feels more like swimming against the current than just going and sitting and showing up when you can and do it and having this routine. And things seem to like fall in place when that happens, even when things are not great. And things feel a lot more disjointed and confusing and chaotic if I don't don't follow up and sit. But yeah, I don't know what the right calculus is there. That's, I'm curious about that is, am I trying hard enough? I feel like I'm not. I feel super guilty I didn't get to sit with you all at the retreat. I've never been to a retreat after all these years, and I'm dying to go, but like it just never schedule the time to make it and actually pull a full sit. Hopefully for the next one I will. But yeah, it's a challenge. I don't know. It's just like I'm struggling with it. Hope I can figure it out. Thank you.
Great talk. I really enjoyed it. But during your talk, you talked about moving around a lot and like having a sort of like struggling with your sense of self.
Yeah.
I could definitely relate. And I just wondered, do you feel like Zen and like sitting has given you like personal insight or better understanding of yourself?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, like that's actually something. I don't like to talk too much about like, what am I getting out of Zen? But that's something where, yeah, it's, I don't know if self-awareness is the right word, because it's more about just, yeah, you're not trying to like have thoughts about who you are. You're just trying to be this person and be in this place. And it's almost like, yeah, there's a lot of talk about like no self and kind of like losing your sense of self. But I think it's more about understanding the blurry line between you and me and between all of us in this space and how we're all connected no matter what. So that's one way I've really, especially as someone that moved around a lot and has seen so much of the world and like feels not connected to a certain place, but to many places and to like the world in general, it helps me come back to this body and to like how, yeah, everything is connected.
Thank you. I like when I'm at the talk live and somebody already gives me the title and the quote. I'm like, oh, as a podcast editor, it's like, oh, phew, my job is going to be easier. Your podcast is called A Clever Game. It's good. It's ironic. It works. Because you said how useless that was. So it's a great title. That's what I'm going to ask about. So I thought it was really funny that it is true that the koans, there's just a code to it. If you crack the code, you can learn nothing and look like you get the shit all day long. And it's like, well, that game's ruined. But I loved how Douglas Adams did for you what the koan couldn't, because you had like the koan experience with Douglas Adams, which is great. Douglas Adams, fantastic writer. But I guess, you know, in our koan, I'm always trying to figure out how to get people to like, if we're going to do these koans, you can get analytical, you can get clever, which are both very unhelpful, or you can divert with a little bit of effort to like personal experience. And I feel like through your talk, you kind of, at the end, I couldn't quite tell if you summed up your old koan in a personal way. Like when you looked at it again, could you then see some of the personal insight in there? Did it resonate personally, or was it still like, eh, a silly trick? How did it look to you now?
When I first read that koan, I wanted to be in, like, I'm doing this to, well, like, maybe, I honestly, like, if I got enlightened in a couple more lifetimes or something, that'd be fine, but I at least want to be able to, like, levitate or something for meditation. So, I definitely had a goal, and I definitely wanted to, like, get somewhere with meditation. I think a lot of what this koan's talking about is that, because it's talking about this ox that goes through this doorway. Once it gets almost all of the way out, it realizes its tail's missing. And it's this idea that you can push through, you can get through whatever goals, whatever doorway you want. But at the end of the day, it's whatever goals you've accomplished, it's you're still the same. There's still that emptiness, and it's still, there's still something missing. There's always going to be something missing, and that's okay.
I have a follow-up question. It's my other question, and now I can relate them. Does some of that sense of no matter what you do, it's never going to quite help the way you want it to, does that somehow fuel some of your aversion to being more consistent, do you think?
Huh.
Or not. It might not. It is just a hypothesis.
Yeah, I think when I like build it up too much, the practice, that's a great point. Because yeah, like I think one of my big problems is with sitting. If everything isn't perfectly right, and I don't have like the right space to do it in, and I don't have the full 32 minutes that I like set on my timer to do it, then I just will be like, oh, whatever, I'm not going to do it. I'll just like brew another coffee. So that's part of something I feel like I need to let go and just not set those expectations and just do the sitting for as long as I need to. Yeah. That's, thanks so much for that. Hopefully it actually turns into some results.
No pressure. That wasn't my point.
Thank you so much, Peter. Yeah, I also love the fact that you come through Toronto. Yeah. That's where I'm actually also. Yeah, I've been to Toronto Zen Center, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's cool. Yeah, it felt kind of. It feels a lot more churchy in a way.
Yeah, in the East, I feel that way. Yeah, every time I go there. No, my question is, I guess it's really generic, because I come from Japan, and Buddhism has been there for centuries, and then a lot of us, including the ones like us who grew up in the temple, feel kind of like, I don't know how you feel about your tradition, family tradition of Catholicism, and because you just don't know what's going on. And we really have a hard time connecting with that roots. And then I had some time in my, well, I spent my time in monastery too, but also, well, I had a time I preferred to hang out in Christian churches and Protestant churches, a lot of Protestant churches in Tokyo. And to me, they gave me like very solid thing, like very solid thing. It's like, there was something I never really saw in my own tradition. And I realized a lot of younger folks do go to churches in Tokyo because they can't really find that in traditional temple setting. And then they kind of build that connection. And then usually Buddhism starts to kick in later in their life when you sort of go through all the inevitable things that you can't just calculate. And then later on, as they start to feel their own death closer, people sometimes come back to Buddhism or Zen. And then one of the questions that I always, I don't know, it's something that's been fascinating me in the West is a lot of younger folks come to Zen embracing this, right? Something they can't just put in words. And I'm trying to share this with my Japanese friends, but and I always have difficulty doing this. Why do you think it's possible? Like, why it's happening in the West, but I don't see that happening in Japan. Anyway, that's been my ongoing question for a little.
Yeah. I mean, the generic answer to it is the grass is always greener on the other side. Well, I think, or at least I think that, like, we always, like, the thing that we grow up with is, like, whatever. It's just the thing we're forced to. And, like, as people, we want to explore and we want to learn new things. So I think that might explain part of it. Of why young people, like especially young adults, usually like want to kind of explore who they are and get a stronger sense of their self, and that's when you, obviously trying from like the marketplace of spirituality that we have in LA is really helpful, and obviously like Zen is part of that in a very to put it in a very cynical way. So yeah, I think that is part of why it happens here and why young people are interested in it. It's just the fact that, like, yeah, living in I guess a capitalist country, like whether it's Japan or the US, where we are told that we need to like go and carve out our own identities and carve out our own future. We don't want to stick to the things that we grew up with. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure there's both countries, a lot of people that stick to their religion. But that's just my theory of that. And I think that's part of what interested me in it is just like, oh yeah, my parents never did this, so I'm going to be better than them. that's my cynical answer to that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So this Zen Center is completely supported by everyone's donations. It is by a pay what you can method. It's been working so far. So if you can't pay, please don't pay. But we usually ask for a $10 to $15 donation per sit. But yeah, again, there's also a little QR code, so you can do Venmo as well. But again, we are just happy that you're here. I'm very happy you all came and listened to me talk for a while. But yeah, if you can donate, please do. It keeps us going.
Thank you, Pedro. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. See you all soon.
See
you soon. No announcements. No. There's no announcements.
Oh, yeah, announcements, no?